Nick, did you know that this episode is brought to you by Ice Shaker?
I did not.
Ice Shaker is sponsoring Bro Chat, and they have provided us with the 36-ounce and the 24-ounce ice shakers. Do you have an ice shaker?
I don't. I think I need one.
Dude, why don't you have an ice shaker? Do you know how long you keep stuff cold? It's like 10 hours you keep drinks cold in this thing.
You said that's a 36-ounce?
Yeah, so this is good for your intra. It's 36 ounces.
Intra, that's very valuable. Right.
And this is good for your pre-workout.
Absolutely.
Ice Shaker also has food bags. Have you seen the food bags yet?
No, please do show.
I'm going to show you the food bags. So right now, these are the shaker bottles. This is a 36-ounce I just showed you, the 24-ounce. They have this little skinny one, which I don't think you could use. But they also have these awesome cooler bags that are waterproof. So, you know, if you spill anything in there, if you put ice in there and stuff, the water won't leak out. So it's like really high quality stuff.
How many meals fit in those?
I don't know. It looks like you can fit like, you know, like three of these, like three meals.
That's perfect.
You think you're going to get one?
I am absolutely going to get one.
Well, if you guys want to get one, use code RBP at iceshaker.com and get 20% off your whole order. Nick, use code RBP, get 20% off your order.
I sure will.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Real Bodybuilding Podcast, and I'm here with the man of the hour, Antoine Vaillant. How are you, sir? How's it going?
I am well, of course. I'm feeling pretty good.
It's been a long time, and I finally got you on the podcast.
Yeah,
and I think it's a perfect time because you just won the Chicago Pro. How are you feeling after the victory?
I feel good. Like everything feels better. You know, it's always fun to compete, especially when you got your loved ones with you and all that stuff. So Vancouver was like super fun, but when you win, it's just the cherry on top. It's just the little extra, like, oh yeah. You know, because not everybody, like, we have to realize that if you win a pro show, like, there's people competing their whole life, they'll never turn pro. Then there's people turning pro, they'll never win a show.
Yeah.
And I know that it's very precious that I was able to win twice so far and do the Olympia again in the December. So I am grateful for it, and I'm aware that it's special. So I don't take it for granted.
So I'll come back to the bodybuilding in a minute, but I want to ask you something because so we've known each other for a really long time, and now we do the Telegram. We're on Telegram doing the circles together, and I get to hear you speak. I get to hear you speak a lot more. One thing I've noticed about you in the last, like, I want to say 5 years or more, is you're very introspective, and you have no ego, and you're very grateful, and you kind of stay away from drama and bullshit. So what I want to ask is this part of recovery? Is it part of growing up, or where does this attitude come from?
Well, the thing with the introspection is that I had to learn to introspect my own behavior, my motives behind my every actions I do. I had to learn how to express how I feel. I had to learn all that stuff to save my life. Because before I did 5 rehabs, right? My last one was last year. And before that, I was just this, I mean, you've known me before from online. Just like, I was just this 26 years old guy who turned pro. You know, I was working hard, of course. And when it's time to prep, I prep. But then it was time to party, I party.
Yeah.
You know, and then at some point you know, when my friend passed away from an overdose, they found him on Christmas Eve. I was like, okay, party's over. And then I tried to stop, and then I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And then I would justify myself. Oh, yeah, I'll just do it one weekend. I'll stop. I was so new to it. It's like things now that I know are so obvious to me that back then I had no idea what I was getting myself into. So, yeah, it's part of growing up. It's part of all the recovery and the rehabs. I had to learn how to do that. Not because I wanted to, because I didn't have a choice. Because if I didn't do that, if I still had an ego, I would think I still had like the upper hand on drugs.
Yeah.
Which I don't. This is the only thing that's stronger than me. If I start using drugs, I'm powerless and I'm done. So I know that, and that humbles you, right? If you think you have control over yourself and then you don't, and then you have time and again, you see that you fail. It's like, holy shit, maybe I'm not that special after all. I'm not like the one guy, you know, like you see all your weaknesses and you have, and I was like, I had to become very honest with myself and see where my failures were, see where my character defects were and all that kind of stuff. So I could actually like work with that from that and build my way back up. And you would think I would understand after one rehab, it took me five.
Do you think people aren't honest enough with themselves? Do you think that's where a lot of the problem comes in?
In AA, there's a section in the literature that they actually removed for NA. So AA is a 12-step program for alcoholics. It's the mother of all programs. It was made in the 1940s by two guys. And before that, everybody was dying, and these two guys came up with that program, and now millions of lives are saved. Yeah. And from that 12-step program, there's a lot of 12-step programs that come out of that. NA is Narcotics Anonymous, just englobes all mind-altering substances. There's even GA for gambling. There's OA for Overeaters Anonymous. So the same program works for everything.
Yeah.
And so in the AA, there's a section that they put that they actually removed from NA because it was too like hopeless kind of sounding, because it said that, it's not exactly how it's written, but it pretty much said that the only people who cannot recover is people who cannot be fully honest with themselves.
Okay.
You know, or people who are not capable of doing that, which means like mental illness sometimes, but, or just like a huge ego. If your ego never dies, you will die, you know, pretty much. So yeah, the self-honesty and the ego, you know, you have to humble yourself. You have to really, because life humbled me a bunch of times. So now it's like, I know what's more, because of all that for sure. And you mentioned earlier that I stay away from the drama. It's just that for me, it's like I know what the real suffering is.
Yeah,
you know, and it was self-inflicted, like an idiot.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like all this drama stuff. I hear people like just like the last weekend, I would hear people talk about this guy. I'm like, man, I'm so far away from all that.
Yeah.
Everything about the fitness industry is positive for me, you know. Like, I don't see it. I don't see it the way other people do, because you pick and choose who you talk to, you pick and choose your battles, where you put your focus on, and people who never had like I'm just speaking of my own opinion, of course, but people who never had like real struggle, they will like find like little things will hurt them more.
Yeah.
Like let's say if a rich kid never had struggle in his life, and then his dad said you can't have the new iPhone. Fucking that's just the biggest suffering he's gonna have this year.
Yeah.
You know, you understand what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think it's possible for someone to humble themselves or somebody to be honest with themselves if they haven't hit rock bottom or haven't hit any real suffering?
Listen, if I would have not had any bad consequences, I would still be part.
Okay, I understand that. But like, for example, you're going through the steps in AA.
Yeah.
So when I met John is the one who is the first person I saw, and he didn't teach me this directly. I mean, we were both friends with John. We were both coached by John.
Yes.
I learned from watching John that your ego can't be out of control, because John was the first person I ever met that had no ego. He was always willing to listen to anybody and didn't get into bullshit and all that. Mm-hmm. So he was the first person I saw like that. So, but John also went through a major struggle. He almost lost his life. So this is what I'm asking is, do you think it's possible for somebody to be like John or to be like you or to have, or to learn to shrink their ego if they haven't been to a place where life has been bad for them?
From my own experience, I don't think so, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Because if you never have like struggle and tribulation, and if you never suffered, and so it's pretty much like my own will and the way I do things works. So I am right. This is, you know, but then if you get your fucking ass kicked a bunch of times, you're like, well, maybe I'm not the best, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
That actually, I mean, I'm not going to say I had suffering, but I learned that through competing, because losing on stage, like when I turned pro, I had an ego, and the more times I took second or third or fourth or just didn't go my way, the more my ego, like I became more humble and I was like, okay, this is, I'm not as special as I thought I was. So
yeah, everybody's fucking good in the pros.
That's right. You know? That's right. So
yeah, yeah.
I just wonder because I think a lot of people struggle with this and I wonder if any amount of introspection can bring you back to humility. So I don't.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. If they would really look at themselves from another perspective, like if they would be somebody else and look at all the facts and stuff, it's like for sure they could learn. And it's like that day, hey, look, I'm not like the center of the world, because like even with the addiction, it's like a problem of like that you think you're the center of the world.
Yeah.
It's like everything revolves around you all the time. Everything revolves around you. You take everything personal and then everything has to go your way. But you don't have to be an addict to be like that. There's people without any problems, they're like that all the time. Yeah. You know, yeah. it's just wrong thinking. But unless there have really bad consequences, like why would they change?
Sure. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that part. I just want to add, so I want to fast forward to this year. So earlier in the year, and I don't know too much about it, so maybe you can keep me up to speed. Earlier in the year, you put out a video saying you had health issues. Is that true?
With the heart?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you explain what happened there? And then you said there was something wrong with it. So can you kind of walk me through that?
Yeah, for sure. So what it was is that there was some people dying in the, you know, oil industry. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do extra testing. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff we don't know about that just with blood work you don't see. So I was like, I'll do the calcium score, I'll do the EKG, all that stuff. And then the calcium score, like, came out like that. It wasn't good, you know? Mm-hmm. So for my age and whatever, I was, like, in the small percent. When you think about it, like, 1 out of 100 person is still a lot of people. But still, it was like, what the hell? There's something there.
Yeah.
So what I did, and I didn't know anything at the time. I was like, so I didn't know, like, can I still compete? This, that, I don't know. Is this still possible? And so I came out with a video on it just to be like, hey, I did a test and I found something I didn't know I had.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason I did that was to make people do more testing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
the same reason why I share about my drug addiction, because I could do this by myself, not tell anybody, use my support here and be fine.
Sure.
But the reason why I do it is just to help people, you know, like if I have the opportunity to make the world a better place by one, even it's like 0.5%, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So that's why I shared about that. And of course, because of people, the bodybuilders dying, you know, that happened, which is very sad. Like, everybody fucking freaked out, jump on board. And they're not doctors, right? They didn't know. Like, I myself didn't know. But then I teamed up with Dr. Dwayne Jackson. And I talked to, we have a friend in common, by the way, who has the same thing as me for years. And he still competed, retired now. But so I was like, okay, well, I would love to, in my head, I was like, I just want to compete again. It's like, is it possible? So let's fix what needs to be fixed. And then I did blood work every 4 weeks since December. And the last bouts of prep every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Even near the show, like to see what's doing what and what's up. And to be honest, like everything improved up until like, of course, like 5 weeks out, you know? Like,
okay, so one second, walk me back. So.
Yeah.
You saw you had a problem.
Yes.
And then you wanted to compete one last time. When you wanted to compete not one last time. You wanted to compete again. Was it for one last time, or was it you just wanted to get back on stage and keep going?
That's if I want to be honest, the only reason why I didn't announce I was doing a show is because if I had to pull out.
Okay, I see. So the other question I want to ask you is what did Dr. Dwayne Jackson say to you that allowed you to say, okay, I can do this show? Or I can do this one and keep going.
You told me a bunch of stuff I had to do.
Yeah.
Daily, and I did that to the T.
Can you give me a couple examples? Just you don't have to give me all of it. Yeah. Like...
No. Yeah. But for example, I think my blood pressure twice a day, morning and night. Okay. And then we had to bring it down, and they would, so we had to keep it there. We had to bring like the good cholesterol up. We had to keep the bad one down. We had to like just all the markers and stuff, and also like because we don't know why exactly I have the calcium score thing.
Yeah,
you know, and I think it's maybe because I have sleep apnea. Right, for years I didn't use a CPAP.
Yeah,
is it the party drugs I was doing, like that raised my blood pressure super high? Is it something that's been there for 8 years? Is it something that's been there because I went to 330? Like, we don't know, but for sure, all the factors like being over 300 pounds, the high blood pressure, and you know, maybe stuff related to dosages, all these things like, and are a factor for sure in yeah. a sense that we can only speculate because I have no data from before it happened.
Sure. Yeah.
So now I have all this data from there, and to be honest, like I was like, okay, well, I want to compete again. Okay, but you'll have to use just this amount, whatever, and not do this, not do that, and I was like, okay, fuck, am I still gonna be good? Then Dwayne was like, you see, you're just gonna be your best prep ever. You'll see, because people think like we always hear that, right? The more shit you take, the better you'll be.
Yeah,
man, it's like in my head, I thought I was like, you know, okay, now it's like I have to do bodybuilding on hard mode. It's like pretty much like I take on less shit, but
on hard mode.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So
like it's a video game
on hard mode. Yeah, you have less perks and less items in your story. but man, I did it. I was in my best condition ever.
I hate to keep veering off, but so many questions keep coming up. So
yeah.
When you saw the high blood pressure, obviously it's related to a multitude of factors.
Yeah.
Were you on a blood pressure medication, and what were some of the things that that Dwayne Jackson said that you had to do to kind of bring it down?
So as soon as we started working together, I did 15 minutes of fasted cardio every morning and 10 minutes step meal before the workout. And the step meal is just to keep my heart rate up and warm up. And the long fasted is just for health and things like that. And
sure.
So there was that, like since December, I did every day under cardio. The only time I didn't do it is near the show. I reduced.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny, right? Because we got to pull back, but yeah. I'm doing more cardio off season than in prep.
Okay.
And the yoga stuff for sure. And the blood pressure medication, I was on the telmisartan.
Yeah.
And I'm still on it. And so that I was already taking that, but there was a lot of stuff like maybe like the sodium, I increased my water. There's a bunch of supplements you can take, like K2, Tocinel, Seraptals, or something. There's a bunch of stuff I take,
okay.
the stuff for the cholesterol. So all that combined together and just like closely, like I talk to them every day.
But you had to. One of the main factors too, I want to ask, is you probably had to keep your weight down too.
Oh yeah. So when this happened, I just dropped everything. And my goal was to bring the weight down.
Yeah.
Just to start from there and get everything stabilized. And from there, we slowly did the bodybuilding stuff, doing blood work every 4 weeks.
But you never bulked. Like, cause I know like one of the main culprits of blood pressure is weight. So you brought, how far did you bring your weight down?
Online, I was saying I was downsizing to like 236. No, I was always 280 pounds.
You were 280.
I was 270, 280 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But for me, that's light, you know?
Like, yeah, I know it is.
At 280 pounds, my blood pressure was in the 110s, you know?
Oh,
you know
okay. What I mean? Okay.
Because my body is made to like, if I eat what I want, I'll be 300.
Yeah,
it's like I don't force feet to go to 300 anymore. I go there by accident.
Yep.
So I brought my weight down as much possible. I think the lowest I went was actually the low 270s, like just off like everything and little pudgy in the lower back. Just like you know, if you look at my content, you can notice, right? The less shoulders, chest is gone, but so I look small. But if people who meet me in person, they see that I have a bigger frame than they think usually. There's always the comments, like, oh, you look bigger in person.
Yeah. So when you were coming back, was the goal to kind of keep your weight at that level, but just kind of recomp and get your body back to like building muscle or filling that muscle back out?
Yeah. We kind of like pull a LeBroni, you know?
Yeah. You just kind of flopped, like your weight stayed.
Flopped it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started my prep at like 17 weeks out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think the high 270s.
Yeah.
You know? And then it kind of like stayed around there. And I went, the lowest I went, the day of the Chicago Pro, I was 257.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you, that's great. That's, so you didn't, so one of the main reasons I would guess one of the main reasons your blood pressure didn't go back up is you didn't bulk again.
No, yeah. No, it was high when I came back from the trip just yesterday because I, you know, I ate pizza and the water. Yeah. Yeah, then sitting on the car for so long. And then I look at my ankles, like, it's not bad to be honest. Like, but I was 257 at the show. And then, was it yesterday morning? I was like 273. So that's 16 pounds.
But you had a deep dish pizza. You had a deep dish pizza. Yes, so.
And I ate McDonald's twice because the first time I wasn't satisfied. So I did a little bit of like, the crazy thing is that I ate some rice and I ate my meals, but then I'm like, you know what? You know, when you drive, I don't feel like me, but when you travel and you take a plane, you drive, if you're off season, you're like, fuck it. Because it turns from like, because if you don't cheat often and then traveling sucks, now traveling becomes fun.
I know.
I can eat like M&Ms, you know?
That's exactly how it feels.
Yeah. So I did a little bit of that driving back, you know, after the crazy thing with this prep is the prep I cheated the less.
I want to go back to your blood work, but before we do, how many cheat meals did you have and how long was your prep and how many cheat meals did you have in the whole prep?
So 17 weeks and the first 7-8 weeks, I would do it once a week.
Okay.
And it was more like an evening where I relax, and then if I eat a big meal, and then instead of meal six, I can have like a little shake or something.
Yeah.
That type of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Nothing. I never binged.
Yeah.
Because binging can really fuck you up in prep. So I did that. And then the last like 10 weeks, I had like two burgers, and then there was nothing.
How many weeks was there nothing?
Like fucking 7 weeks. Eight weeks. But for me, it's like, it's only about the cheat meals. It's also about the break, you know, the sitting down with your girlfriend or something, you know.
That's,
you know,
right.
What I mean? Like, it's a mental break.
That's but right.
Then I was like, why is like, usually Dorian always gives me like more cheats and stuff. Then I realized, oh, Patrick Tour is coaching him and he's giving him zero cheats. You know, when you're a coach, you
absorb
what works for you.
Yeah.
You kind of like, so I was like, fucking Patrick.
Patrick, wait, Patrick's helping Dorian?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. So.
Oh yeah. He's coaching him. Yeah.
So so Patrick's rubbing off on Dorian, and then you're not getting any cheats.
Yeah, I hate Patrick Tour.
I know.
Fucking guy. Yeah.
He did the same thing. He did the same thing to Ben. Funny. He started coaching Ben, and now Ben is like anti cheat meals. So.
That's funny. But the thing is, look, I think it worked because my waist was like small, like for the Cali.
Yeah.
So it did work. It did something. And I think that also for the waist part, the fact that I didn't start my diet at over 300, it's like nothing was like, I got tight pretty quick here.
Yeah, there was no bloating or anything. Yeah.
No. So only like sometimes at night, you know, if you're not careful, the meals can stack up. If you eat like oh, I got to go to bed early, I got to eat this one in an hour and a half. Like there's nothing 100% always perfect, right? But sometimes only like at night I would feel a bit bloated, but man, I could do like vacuums, like
All right, so we had some technical issues because of me. I apologize, but we're back, and we were talking about cheat meals and how you got none for 7 weeks, and it actually helped you.
Yeah,
so that's good.
But yeah, I think it did help me. I won. Yeah.
So I want to show people real quick if they hadn't seen it. I'm sure almost everybody has, but if you don't know Antoine, his Instagram, if you're listening on audio, Instagram is Antoine V87. So we're taking a look at your photos here. I think this may be the best Antoine I've ever seen. Do you feel that way?
For sure. Yeah. My package overall, for sure was the best, I think. And my condition was even better in Cali. Yeah. And there was even new details I never saw that I had. Like I had like striations in my lats, like at the beginning of it, and I never had that before. Underneath my pec, you could see my under pec. just like going down. Yes, so my weird. It was like, yeah, it's like when I was doing like abs and thighs, I was like, what the fuck is that? It was, I thought it was like another ab, but it was actually was my pec major or minor, whatever.
Yeah,
sticking out. So no, my condition was better in Chicago.
Okay, so yeah. What I want to ask you is, this is really interesting because a lot of people, like you said, think more is better, and you said you had to use less and you had to keep your weight down and you didn't have to bulk and all of these things, and you actually looked the best you've ever looked, in my opinion. So when you say you used less, you don't have to give me exact dosages or anything like that, but how much less compared to like before? Were you like minimal, like nothing? And like, what are we talking about?
Well, like the tests in half.
Yeah.
And like less compounds, and then like orals just like the last 4 weeks.
So has it kind of like opened your eyes to a new way to do it?
Yeah. And to be honest, like Dwayne said, I promise you this will be the best prep you've ever had. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But the thing is, it was easy until for like 4 weeks out.
Yeah.
You know, and usually like it's hard, like kind of like the whole time almost. And I wonder if it's the body is like just processing all this shit, you know, and my diet was like way better now. My diet, it was like a balanced diet with fiber, fruits, and fats, way more fats now than before.
Yeah.
And before it was mostly like a little bit of fat, just carb rotation, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And but now I had like fats at every meal, and I had carbs at every meal.
Yeah.
I never went to, like, and I had like a fiber, like a tablespoon of chia seeds, tablespoon of either kidney stuff or a daily cleanse. And I had the Pro Biofit by ATP. It's like it's like food for the gut, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So and I had a total of 40 grams of fiber per day, every day.
So, and, Dorian, Dorian was doing your diet. Now, all these changes, because you haven't changed coaches, but Dorian obviously has learned a lot more. So did anybody else have any input? Like, was like Dwayne Jackson have input to your diet, or did Dorian just kind of try something different?
No. So Dwayne Jackson had the final say for everything now.
Oh, okay. So for diet and everything.
Yeah. So I had like a group chat, just me, Dorian, Dwayne. That was the for the chickens and everything, the diet. So Dwayne oversees everything.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to him every day now. Like I can call him a good friend. He saved my life down the line probably and saved my career.
Has Dwayne coached anybody, or is he not necessarily looking at you as a bodybuilding eye, but more as like a health advisor? Like, what is the role he's playing?
So he's like a health expert.
Okay.
He's a doctor, right? And he competed before.
Yeah.
And we can relate on a lot of things being him. So he understands the whole thing, right?
Okay.
And he just knows, fuck, this guy is so smart. There's something wrong with him.
So Dorian's giving you the bodybuilding, like what he thinks you should do. But then Dwayne is saying, but for health-wise.
This is not whatever. Okay. They work together. And sometimes they would call each other to just figure out something. And then he would send me the plan. But yeah, then I'm like, man, I should have done that years ago. Yeah. Everybody should have a fucking Dwayne Jackson when we're seeing everything, because he has the education and experience and he understands the sport.
Sure.
So I'm like, then in my head, I'm like, wow, I would, Dorian, I trust 100%. I think he's the best coach in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, if I wasn't coached by Dorian, coached by somebody else, I'd be like, wait a minute, why would I trust this guy? Like, I would, now that I've experienced what it is like to have a health expert, a doctor like that, along the prep, I would never do it without one. And if I could have changed in the past, I would have always dieted with a coach that has your health in first, like Dorian always has that. And then he had a doctor who oversees everything.
Yeah.
The doctor knows about this stuff. Because the thing with doctors is that they learn at school shit, but they don't know all the stuff that we do.
That's right.
But they have access to all the studies, though.
That's right.
Because doctors have access to all studies we don't have access to. And so it depends on who's proactive and will be interested into really digging that stuff and is smart enough to... Because you can be book smart and fucking think your way through med school.
Yeah.
And then there's like smart, open-minded, proactive research. that's what Dwayne is. It's like, it's like another level.
So I understand. So it's like Dorian might say, you need, let's say, just for example, let's say you need 10 ounces of protein per meal. Would Dwayne be like, well, wait a minute, for health reasons, maybe we should do 8? Like, I'm not saying that's the exact example, but is that kind of how it went?
Yeah, but usually they would be both pretty like on the ball, but then sometimes Dwayne would be like, oh, I'm not sure about that. Let's ask Dwayne. Then Dwayne would say, I think this is a better thing because this, that. He would actually fucking say all the fancy words and stuff. And and then I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. I'll do that.
Okay.
But they work really well together. It's like I'm super lucky and grateful that I'm just like both these guys are behind my prep, you know, 100%. Yeah.
So you have you did blood work, you said, every month leading up and then every 2 weeks within your prep. So during that time, were any of your markers going the wrong way? And did it ever give you any fear, or were your markers going in the right direction kind of the whole way through?
No, it's crazy because even when we started adding stuff, because we would, okay, now let's add this.
Yeah.
And then it would still improve. Let's add that, still improve. I'm like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. And then you add this, for some reason, it improved again after that. So it's like, I know exactly what compounds will hurt you more.
Sure.
And it's pretty easy to know which ones usually.
It's actually pretty incredible because you kind of did your own study on yourself and you watched it the whole way through. So you kind of know now exactly what works for you, what doesn't.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. So you get to the show. You look the best you've ever looked. You did Vancouver. Was it disappointing to take second? Did you think you should have won? How did that feel in Vancouver?
I wasn't disappointed at all because I did my 100% maximal effort best.
Yeah.
And everything I do. And going against Ian, of course, you're like, you go back and forth. Can I beat him? Oh, he's fucking good. Top center in the world. Then you go back and forth. Yeah, everybody's beatable. He's not Ronnie Coleman. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, sometimes you go back, like, am I fighting for second place? So you go back and forth, right? It's like prep. You doubt yourself sometimes. Even Chicago Pro backstage pumping up. I feel a little bit flat, you know, because I was so fucking dry. Yeah. And I look at all these guys, I'm like pumping up. I'm like, man, like, am I like, I feel small, you know? And then on stage, whatever happened. But like, going against Ian, when I got second place, I wasn't angry at all. Yeah. And the thing is, with the energy and the crowd and the vibe and the feedback, I'm like, they were saying like it was close in the morning. And that's not just opinion. That's the judge's scorecard too. So with that, I'm like, wait a minute. So he's like seventh in the world. He came in like in a really good package. He says it's like his best combination that he had. So I'm right in the mix in my head, right? Yeah. At that show I was, you know, in my head.
Yeah.
So I wasn't disappointed at all. Because the thing is, if you're afraid of losing, don't compete.
Yeah, true.
Like, don't compete. Sometimes people won't compete because they're afraid of failure.
True.
Yeah, you can't be afraid of failure and compete. Everybody loses. Ronnie lost.
Yeah.
Jay lost many times. We all lose. Like, Phil Heath lost.
Yeah.
So it's like people get butt hurt when they lose. Like, are you butt hurt because you didn't do your best?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a few times I was really disappointed losing.
Yeah.
It's when I was younger, it's because I didn't do my best. True. I knew where I fucked up. Exactly where I fucked up. I knew what I did wrong. And now then you feel bad. But if you did everything right, you give you 100%, and then you get second place, you're like, I was so close. But the thing is, you can't be mad at yourself. You can't be mad at the judges. That's their job. They're going to judge you. You know, why are you doing bodybuilding then?
Yeah.
Go do a race that you'll know clear cut if you win or lose, right?
It's almost like, because I've said that exact same thing before. The only time you feel good about yourself is when you can put your head down on the pillow at night and know that you did every single thing possible that day and the day before and all the way leading up to the show. So I think it's almost like when people are upset, they're really mad at themselves, but they don't know how to direct it. They need to channel it somewhere. So they channel it to the judges or they channel it to the other competitor, because I'm almost exactly the same as you in that when I lost, but I did everything I could do, I was okay with it. Yeah. But when I lost and I know I kind of fucked around or I didn't eat all my meals on time or whatever it was, I was upset in a different type of way. So you're right.
Mad at yourself.
Yeah, you're mad at yourself, but I don't think people like being mad at themselves. So yeah, they point a finger somewhere else.
Yeah, we talked about ego earlier. Sometimes their self-worth and ego will be attached to like their performance. So then they get hurt. Their ego gets hurt and then it's like, can be because of me. Right. Has to be. I go, Rob, this, that, you know, like,
yeah.
So for me, no, it's never like that, man. Like, and the thing is, like, if we rewind a little bit, I said, I just want to compete again. Is it possible? Right.
Yeah.
And just, you want to rewind even more. 2016, 17, I was homeless though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, so for me, it's like, I got stuff to look back and I'm like, man, even if I wouldn't have won a show, you know, I did my best. I was with my friends. I was at my best package. I did the best I could. And I was able to go on stage and battle it out. That's why I go on stage and I'm like, I do the full experience.
Yeah.
I don't just pose and just like, no, I'm there. It's like, let's go.
You're having a really good time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm pretty quiet backstage and stuff and leading up to the show. But as soon as like I hear my name, it's like, let's turn it on.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. So for me, it's that if you give you 100%, you can't, doesn't matter where you place or where you're going to place, because, and also if you, it makes me laugh when people say like, yeah, I'm going to win this. I'm like, you don't know shit. You don't even know if you'll be there tomorrow. That's right. True. And the thing is like, everybody can win.
Yeah.
That's what people don't understand that. It's like for another example, if I just want to talk about my own experience.
Yeah.
Italia, New York Pro, I was seventh place.
Yeah.
Ian won that show too, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people say, oh, whatever, I flopped. And then all the guys over me were like, some of them won shows, this and that. And then a week later, I beat all the guys that beat me and won. So
I remember that.
The thing with the pros, within the top six, anybody can like win depending on who's sharp and who's not.
It's true.
Right? And who fucks up, who doesn't fuck up.
Yeah.
So anybody can win. You can win. Everybody can lose and win.
Was there a deeper sense of elation or happiness in Vancouver when you got there just because you weren't sure if you're going to be able to compete again? Was there a sense of like maybe sitting backstage or sitting in your hotel room before you went the day before, maybe thinking, fuck, I wasn't even supposed to compete and now I'm here?
Yeah. Well, I was pretty in the zone. You know how you are. I was pretty in the zone, to be honest, like of the things to do. You know how it is when you but I would step back sometimes and I would be like, yeah, I would remember what I told myself. Yeah, I'm going to compete. This is good. And I would also always tell myself that, okay, what can I control? Like, I can only control right now, the efforts right now. I can't even control the future. I don't know what's going to happen. So I should focus on that. I should just focus on today, how I can make my next actions, you know, the best I can. And then I would always tell my mom, I'm just doing my best, mom. That's all I can do. Because the best you can do is just your best. That's it. Right.
Yeah.
You can only control your effort and your attitude in life, in your action. Everything else, you have no control over it when you think about it.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Right? Yeah.
So I want to go back because honestly, man, your outlook on life is very inspiring. Like to someone like me, like, I feel like I'm very introspective and I always want to be a better person. So when I see your behavior and your outlook on life, it's inspiring to someone like me because I'm like, okay, I want to be like that. I want to have that type of outlook. So, but take me back to before. So when was the first time you got into drugs and how did you get out of it? Was it because your friend passed? Was that the first time that you got out of it? Or how did you get out of it the first time?
So I always knew that me using drugs was I'll keep it casual. It's temporary anyways.
Yeah.
But then what happened is that when I won my pro card, back then I would party, but like off season, like once a month, every 2 weeks, still like too much and extreme. Like when I would go hard.
Yeah.
But then I could stop when it's time to prep. you know, I could start when I started to prep, I could control it. And then I turned pro. And then just before that, I had like a really bad breakup from a bad relationship. And 3 weeks out, I just, you know what, I'll just quit my gym job. I bought a car and I broke up, right? And then I was like, I'm just going to do a full-time bodybuilding for the show. And because I was already sponsored by Universal back then. So I had money coming in. I was just working at the gym because it's like, I got to work and do stuff, right? So, but then I stopped that. So after, when I won, big mistake, I was like, you know what? I went through a little bit of struggle there with a breakup, this, that. And I won. I did all 9 meals, my cardio. I deserve to party. In my head, I was entitled to now I'm going to reward myself with a good time. And what was a good time for me back then? I'm not going to go into details, but basically, it was a good time. Yeah. But so then what happens is that now that I don't have a schedule anymore, I can party whenever I want.
Yeah.
Because my money's coming in from doing videos and content, you know, back then already. So if I want to party on a Tuesday afternoon, I can. And then the thing is, like, who parties on a Tuesday afternoon? I want to party with people. I'm not doing drugs alone, right? So who parties on a Tuesday afternoon? Give me some examples. Give me an example.
Well, I don't know. Nobody.
Who do you think?
Well, drugs. No, there's guys who are fucking junkies.
Yeah. So look, drug dealers.
Yeah.
Strippers, escorts.
That's right.
You know, criminals.
Yeah. So
and then I was like, and they loved partying with me because I wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, so I started hanging out with those people. Yeah. These people are crazy like me. Yeah. You know, so I had like I started hanging out with the wrong bunch. And because I would do it like whenever I want, and then quickly, if my definition of fun and pleasure is an instant reward with drugs and whatever, I would do it more often. Why would I just do it on the weekend? I can do it in the week. Yeah. So then it started becoming like, I would do it pretty much all the time. Then I was like, oh, fuck, that's too much. I stopped. I would do two, 3 weeks back in training. I would gain some muscle back because of my genetics. And then I would be like, okay, now I can do 1 weekend. I can reward myself 1 weekend. And then one weekend would be like 10 days. You know, like I could never do it 1 weekend. It was always more. Why would I stop now? After 48 hours, I start hitting my peak. You know, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that went downhill pretty bad. And even though through all that, I knew that if I wanted to stop, I could in my head, right?
Because I
was kind of doing that, but I wasn't really self-aware of all this shit yet. But when my friend died, I'm like, you know what? I got to go back to my... Because last thing he told me, he had like a poster of me on the wall because I had some for the magazines or whatever. He said, what are you doing, man, party, like doing drugs like that with us? Like, you should go back to that. He pointed a picture on the wall. You should go back to that. That's your bodybuilding. Go stop fucking around. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. But like you need to, like, I was focusing on him a lot because he was like going through shit.
Yeah.
And then he left 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. Usually he comes around 3 days, you know, we don't hear him back. He comes back 4 days, 5 days, and then the 6th day, they found him dead on Christmas Eve. So then I was like, man, I think parties are like, maybe party's over now for me. Like, you know, like my fucking friend died. Well, I called him a friend, but it's like, you know, it's just people I hung out with back then.
Party friend.
Yeah, but in my head, we were friends, you know, back then. But now looking back, it's like, as soon as I stopped doing drugs, all the people I was doing drugs with, they just...
Yeah, they're party friends.
They're gone, yeah.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I even did a video back then where on YouTube, January 5th, 2015, where I say that why I was away, whatever. Then I kind of like insinuated that I had a problem with drugs. And then I was like, I'm coming back. And then 2 weeks later, I used drugs again. But then I was like, well, I said I would never use it again. Because back then I was like, I'll just stop and I'll control myself later, whatever. And I would do it on a weekend. I would go on a bender. But now it was the first time I said I'll never use drugs again.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, I did. After my friend died.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, oh. It's weird. And then I just stop again. And then the crazy thing now is that every time I use drugs after that, there was a sense of guilt every time I did. So I kind of ruined for myself by doing that. The party, I mean. because now I had to do more. I had to like avoid that feeling too, the guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And then I kind of moved to Toronto, you know, and stuff. And I thought the problem was Montreal. Like, oh, it's Montreal.
Yeah.
And then I went to Toronto. The fucking problem is inside. It's always been inside since I'm a kid. So that didn't work. And then I used drugs again. I tried to stop. I was in another relationship, you know. And
had you gone to any rehabs at this point, or still no
rehab? No, okay. never, because I was trying to stop by myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was failing miserably. And at some point, you know, they found me in a car, passed out, because I was awake for days, because I would always be awake for like days on end. My body was shutting down, so I parked just by parking the car. I just passed out in the car, and my locations were all on my phone. And they found me like the girl I was dating at the time and one of her friends, and then she was like freaking out, right? Because she saw me like try and fuck up and lie. Because as an addict, you're gonna lie. No, yeah. I'm not high. Yeah. And then imagine you look at the person that you're supposed to like respect, and then you say, I swear on my life I'm not high. Then you are.
Yeah.
Inside, you're just twisting with fucking guilt and shame. It's terrible. And so she said, you got to go to rehab. You're too far. You got to go to rehab. And then I was like, I took a moment and I'm like, I did the math of me trying by myself, the fucking my friend dying, me to try and stop. And then I'm like, all right, fuck. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to stop. I wanted, of course, the part of me that didn't want to, but.
I was just going to ask, did you really want to stop, or did you just think you should stop?
No, I did. I did.
Okay.
I did because if I didn't, it would have not worked.
Yeah.
But you go back and forth, right? Yeah, that's why it's a daily thing. Like even now, if I did nothing for recovery, if I just didn't care, did whatever I wanted, did my own will, I would be dangerous at some point.
Okay.
But I'm on top of it all the time. Right? Sure. I just know myself. I just know myself now. So we're going back to the first rehab there. So I was like, you know what? I by myself, I couldn't do it. So yeah. And the thing with me is I'm open-minded, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from the get-go. So I'm like, whatever, let's try this fucking shit out. I don't know what else to do. Like I keep like lying and just like using drugs and losing my gains and stuff. And not doing my commitment to like my job and my bodybuilding. And because when I was doing drugs, the last thing I wanted to do is train or sleep. So it doesn't matter. I'm not a functioning addict or alcoholic.
Yeah.
Some people can just do drugs and drink and they work and it's the opposite. So, so I went there for 6 days after 45, I'm like, man, I think I'm good. And then it came out that I was a Toronto pro. We're Dorian and the guys. Everything was good, and then as soon as I was by myself for 2 minutes, the door closes, she leaves for 2 minutes. I was like, oh, if I wanted to do drugs, I could do it right now and get away with it. And then the obsession kicked, and I fucking do 3 days after rehab.
How long were you in rehab? How long was it?
45 days. 45 days.
Oh, you went for 45 days.
Yeah.
And yeah, 3 days after
2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So then 3 days after, I relapsed again. And then here we go again. Same thing, lying, hiding, this and that.
Yeah.
So then I was like, that's my second one. And then it was consequences, breakup. Like nobody wants to be with a fuck up like that, right? Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
You know? So so I went to my second rehab. Then I go into rehab. I say, I'm going to stay 6 months. He said, the program is 3 months. I'm going to do two in a row.
Okay.
So I did. See, the mentality is still there, right? So I did 6 months. Six months of rehab, the second one. And the first one.
You were there. You were actually there for 6 months.
All of them, I'm there 24/7.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So the first one was like a high-end one where the guy knew who I was because of bodybuilding. I had like the room was like $40,000 a month that I had, and I had a really good deal. And I had my dog there. I had food I wanted, like a steak. And
it was like a vacation.
The second one was like one for people from the street.
Yeah.
And I lost the contract eventually, so I had to pay it for it myself. And then at some point, because you could be on welfare and just have it paid. I did that like two or three times with the rehabs. So I did 6 months, and that one was good because we dug deep. And it was the 12-step base where I started to learn about the 12-step. So I do that 6 months. And after that, it was going well for a month. Then I relapsed again.
Jeez.
After 6 months of rehab.
And how do you, wait. So I want to get into your mind a little bit. How do you relapse? When you get out, you're there for 6 months and you're like, you get out and you're like, okay, I'm good. So I have a close person in my life that's an addict. Mm. So I always kind of ask him these same questions. How do you go from I've solved my problem, I feel better, I'm ready, I'm on a straight and narrow to, and knowing that you have an addictive personality to using again a month later? How does that happen? Like how does the thought process work?
A lot of time for me is that I will let my thinking go into an obsession.
Okay.
Because you're going to want the drugs.
Yeah.
Like you're going to crave the drugs like most, like a lot, you know, like that's the point. If you start fantasizing about it, whatever, using whatever, then the obsession kicks in.
Yeah.
And then when that starts in your brain, it's like you're hardwired. It's like if you look, if you take like a football field with a meter of snow and you always walk to the path of using drugs, the thing is the fucking nice little path. Like,
yeah,
it's like all like step down, flat. There's even big fences if you want, like fucking lights now. And then there's like the path of not doing it. It's like fucking rough snow. So the brain will always like go towards the easy fix. Because if you feel bad and then you can feel good within seconds, your brain registers that. That's how you become addicted.
That's
you
a keep really
doing
good,
that.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. So you keep doing that. So then the rough path is like hard to do it. Then your brain, as soon as the thing is, as soon as I would feel an emotion, I remember I used to reward myself for drugs. Mm-hmm. And if I would be sad or angry, I would do drugs. Mm-hmm. If it was raining, I would do drugs. If it was sunny, I would do drugs. If it was a birthday, I would do drugs. If it was a Monday, I would do drugs. Any day, any day, I would do drugs.
Yeah.
So that's how I would do it again. It's just that my brain is just like hardwired to do it. So at some point, I just too weak, whatever, or I didn't have enough. I didn't suffer enough yet, I guess, too. And I didn't know, I didn't do it as much effort and recovery. And then I relapsed again. So, and a lot of times during why I would relapse is that I would have a heightened sense of emotion. And if I'm angry or really hurt, you know, when you're really angry, you can bang on a table. You don't think right. You can say things you don't mean.
Yeah.
Well, it's because when you're on heightened emotions, your IQ goes down, if you want to say like that.
Okay.
So you become like stupid when you're emotional, right?
Yeah.
So I don't make my best decisions when I'm emotional.
Sure.
So I would always make the decision to do drugs, not when like everything is good. It's calm, more like it's more like when you're angry or excited, because I'm really impulsive. Yeah. I would make a decision out of the whim. Fuck it. You know, I would have a case of the fuck it, I call it. I would say, fuck it, nothing matters anyway.
Yeah.
Forget angry, you know, and just do it. So that happened a bunch of times for relapses. But after my second one, I did a third one. And that one was good. It was the same one as the first one, but the counselors were really good. I really dug deep there. And after that, I was actually good for 6 months. And then something happened. I was with the... I was actually after that, was this after the, that's after the third one. I was staying in the shelter in Hamilton at the Salvation Army. Yeah. They did a mistake. They thought that they had like a program for drug addiction there. They just sent me into the shelter. So I was living with like people from the street with mental issues and the homeless people with trays, you know, like, with little food stamps to just like to eat the food. And I would like have I would have only $200 a month.
How long were you there for?
Just a month, because I thought I was going to a halfway house, like a sober living house.
Yeah.
But that wasn't it. So I stayed there a month because I already paid for it with the government and stuff. So okay, I guess my friend Aaron, he's my sponsor for my best friend too, since 2015, one of my best friends. He dropped me there. Is he sure it's here? I said, yeah. He said, fuck, man. It felt so bad. Because like, we're all, you know, if you go, I don't know if you went ever to Hamilton on York Boulevard.
Yeah.
This is where I was.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. And So then I was like, oh, fuck it. I'll just do it. Fuck it. I'm here anyway. Like, what else am I going to do? You know, so I went there. I slept the first night. I fucking the rashes everywhere because I had my own room, but I had like bumps, red bumps everywhere. Like, what the fuck is this? Like, so I go and I complain, and then just putting my forearms on the counter, I would have rashes. Oh. It was so dirty in there.
Yeah.
So they changed my mattress. I was fine. Stayed there a month. My room was the size of like, I don't know, a locker. The bed was like a little, those little army like bunk beds,
yeah,
whatever.
Like a cot. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but then you know what? I was around people like the lowest people of society, and sure. I was one of them, you know. Yeah. And then when I would eat, I actually cried that time. I was like, I had the tray, and I was like, I wanted to eat, sit at a table. I would choose somebody who didn't cut my appetite, sit in front of them.
Somebody who didn't what?
Cut my appetite. Who didn't okay. stink and cut my appetite. But it was that sad. Yeah. So I did a month there. Then I did a sober living house. And then Doran helped me. And I was staying in the little tree house in the back in Lowville. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So everything was going well. And then I went back to a relationship that I had before in Toronto. And she had her own thing going on, whatever. And then I felt betrayed one day because of something that of how I processed the thing that she did. And I was so angry. It was the first time I even told Doran and the guys, like, the first time I hear the devil in my head
okay.
since before.
Yeah.
And I was so hurt and angry that I was like, you know what? Fuck everything. Fuck it. Fuck the world. Fuck myself. Fuck this. Fuck that. I'm going to go get fucked up. So yeah. I got hurt. So I decided to hurt myself even more when I think about it. it's kind of weird. But that one was a rough one. When you start out the bender like that, it was like 2 or 3 months of nonstop. I tried to go to rehab 3 or 4 times during that time, and I was running away. I had like I was in the hospital, and I just ripped up everything. And I went to the rehab. They said you're too fucked up to go to rehab. Go to the hospital first. I was like, oh, all right. So they sent me to the hospital with my wallet by myself. So I ripped up everything. The thing was like beeping and stuff. I had my stickers on me. Grabbed my stuff. I ran and I just jumped in the bus. And then I got somebody to pick me up and I kept partying. So I was pretty crazy.
You know, are you living on the street at this point or like what? Because I know you're living.
Oh, I was not living anywhere.
So are you sleeping?
I would go from places to places, hotels, just like couch surfing pretty much.
Oh man.
But I didn't realize that in my head at the time. Yeah. I thought I was just partying. Right, but then sometimes I would be, dude, sometimes like the sad moments when I hear about it, I would be like a Tim Hortons on a Thursday morning at like 4 a.m. trying to find people to party with. You know those people that at Tim Hortons by themselves, they're fucked up?
Yeah, that was you.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That was me.
That's crazy. Was
me. So I did that, and then at some point, I just went to detox. And that was my fourth one. Yeah, so my fourth one, I went back to Montreal. And I just went to another rehab, fourth one. This one was actually 2 months,
okay.
2 or 3 months. And that one was, oh my God, very strict. We would do the count, the body count, every like fucking 15 times a day where everybody has to be there. You raise your hand when they name your name.
Yeah.
So that was like, it's pretty much like how rehabs are sometimes is that your life is the out of control. You have no structure. They will put back the structure in it, like by force, pretty much, you know?
Yeah.
So I did that. But all of them, once I'm in it, then I kind of like sleep and wake up. And I always do the rehabs 100%. Like okay. I've always, all of them, I was in it to win it.
So
it's just that, it's just when you come out, into the world that made you use drugs.
Can I ask you, looking back at it, so you've been to rehab 5 times.
Yeah.
Do you think? Because you said you do them 100% when you're there. Do you think you've learned a little bit each time to get to the point where you are now?
Yeah, everything like is I learned something different at all of them. The one that I actually learned it's different every time. But the last one, like after the one I did last year, it was my fifth one, right? So I did only 30 days, but were very effective. And 2 days in, I was already like,
how did you? Why did you relapse last year? Because you had already been doing pretty good. Like you did, at this point, for people who don't know, at this point you were kind of doing well. Your physique was good. You'd done the Olympia.
Yeah. So I did the Olympia. I did the one of Cali before that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's my own fault always, my decisions, but I started like drinking a little bit in 2020, whatever, or before that. And I had a slip actually one time. Actually, it's just that I was in a relationship that wasn't good for me. Yeah. You know, not because of each other, but just because it just didn't work. Yeah. And it just wasn't good. It was like kind of a toxic relationship. But it's not anybody's fault. It's just that's how it is, right? I don't want to talk badly about anybody. Yeah. That's not how it is at all. But then I was like, you know what? Maybe I can drink. And then I started like misusing prescription pills. And then before the Olympia, I started like adding like anti-anxiety like pills, like benzos.
Wait a minute. This is like while you were prepping for the Olympia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was like, because I have ADHD, right? So I need like medication if I don't want to have fucking scatterbrain and nothing gonna get done. But the thing is that I gotta follow them like they are written, or else it's like a relapse, right? So now it's like it's very different. Now I'm like, I know like my recovery comes first. There's nothing that's gonna change that. But back then I was like, I didn't, because I was drinking sometimes and nothing bad was happening.
Yeah.
So I was like, still going to my 12 step meetings, but I wouldn't say much because I felt like a phony, like I wasn't true.
That's right.
It's because it's a program of abstinence from all drugs.
That's right.
So it's like, I wasn't really fully in it. And that was my mistake. And then I started playing around with other stuff and then the Olympia. So pretty much like I was already going to an obsession towards that. And then with the prep, the obsession on the prep. But then it's like obsession is like, it's like a picture that when you have a car, you press the brake, it stops right away.
Yeah.
Obsession is like a train.
Yeah.
You press the brake, it doesn't stop right away. So the Olympia was the brake, it was ending there. The train kept going. And fucking crashed. You know what I mean? So, and then I was hurt again. Emotional and hurt because of stuff that happened. And I just said, fuck it one day. Because I had no recovery. I had no recovery. And then as soon as I did it, I was like, I tried to stop after 2 days. And I just pretty much tried to stop for a month and a half. And it was literally like, I was with Rachel and Doran, because everybody knew that I fucked up, right? It's like, it's kind of obvious. You know? Who am I going to fool? So I was avoiding everybody at this point, and that's the main sign.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right, yeah.
So pretty much, like, called the rehab, and I was going to get back home and just do the rest. And Rachel put her foot in the door, and she said, like, no, you're staying here. And then I was like, because I would never bring stuff to their house out of respect in my head, you know. So I wanted to use the rest, which is like stupid because it's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck is it going to do? I'm going to run out anyway. Yeah. But just as an addict, it's just like you want to do everything, right?
Yeah.
So she just put physically herself in front of the door. And I chose them over it. Mm. But there was this fucking inner crisis, Dennis, because it was the first time that like I felt that way, and it's like I could literally like see and feel like a demon and the fighting inside me, you know, like. But I just at some point I just said, "Oh, I give up," and I sat down and I just cried, and that's like we call it in the program the act of surrender is where you actually surrender to the fact you're powerless to the program and everything, and that's like part of like the. You know, the acceptance of that part of the first step, part of the program to like start recovery. And then as soon as I surrendered, you know, the obsession was gone. Woke up the next day feeling like with my head right now.
Yeah.
It's just that was because if I add drugs in my system, the obsession kicks in. The devil is like kind of like, if you want a picture like that, is there and it has a hold on me.
Sure.
Like everywhere I go, it's going to put me like a puppet. I tried and it brings me back, right? But if you surrender, it's like that you, it's like you have like it's like you have that relief from you a little bit.
Sure.
And it's not even like there's no explication, but like that's why we have like a higher power in the program, because it's like I'm not doing that. Like who removed it?
Yeah.
Who removed that? Why now I can start my recovery? It's just like that's why they call it a spiritual program. That's why it's like people they think it's weird, but it's like it's the only thing that saves millions of lives.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that's not even science. Of course, there's like a CBT in it, with the cognitive behavioral therapy. There's stuff mixed in there, but there's a spiritual aspect of it, and that's the secret weapon against addiction.
So is this the first? The first time you've gone to recovery and like done all the steps and like? Is this the first time you've gone fully through the recovery process?
No, because during the 6 months, I did the 12 step twice. It was 1 week, one step. So I've done it before, but it's just now the mistakes I've done is that, okay, listen, if I stop doing what makes me good, I'm going to go back to being bad.
Okay.
So my mistake was that I started drinking, I stopped doing a program, I stopped my recovery. So what do you think happened eventually? If I stop doing that, stop going to meetings, stop the recovery, I'm going to go back. That's why earlier I said in the podcast, I said that, right now, if I just do my own will and I don't take care of myself and my recovery, it's going to be dangerous down the line. Not maybe not right away, maybe not in a month or 2 years. At some point, it's going to happen. And when am I going to die?
I talked to one recovered addict who told me that one of the 70% success rate came from guys who go to AA meetings. They go 90 meetings in 90 days. They got to go every day.
Yeah, I've done that after my fifth rehab. I've done that when I the first time I did that. Yeah.
So would you say that an addict who's not using but hasn't done recovery, do they have a good chance of getting past
an addict? An addict who's not using?
Who's not using. They're clean, but they've never gone through the recovery process to actually learn the mental strength and the mental tools they need to keep moving forward. Is that person going to be successful, or like 9 times out of 10, it's going to be bad?
You're gambling there.
Yeah.
Because I think most of the time it doesn't work. Yeah. Like you go to rehab, and I remember one rehab, I think the counselor got flagged for that. He said, because everybody was fucking around. He said, you don't understand. Only 2% of you will succeed. Pretty much like the stats are like against us. Yeah. But then in my last rehab, they were saying that two of the people, and it's like, I say, yeah, but what does that 2% do? What do they have in common?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They come out, they do the meetings, they get involved, they do service work, they do recovery fully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the 98% comes out, they do whatever.
They just go off and do their own thing.
So the stats are not against us. It's just like, what are the 2% doing?
The work you have
just
to do, work.
Do so, that. So now that, so if you, yeah.
So I just, sorry, I just want to ask. So now that you're out and you've obviously been prepping and you want to show and all that, is this still part of your? It's still part of your daily activity. Like you still go to meetings and you still like are fully immersed in the recovery process.
Yeah, well, there's one tonight I'm gonna go because I was traveling and I didn't really go, but I went to one right before leaving for Vancouver.
Okay.
And but I'm always in contact with people in recovery every day.
Okay.
So that helps. And the thing is, it's also like my surroundings here with like all my friends at the gym, they're not zero party people there.
That's right.
Some people were. So it's the best environment for me. So you add that plus my recovery part of life, you know, that I do. It's always on my mind.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm always talking to people about that. So I'm good. Yes, I'm going to go to one tonight because tomorrow is my birthday. So I might do something or dinner or something.
I already wished you a happy birthday on Circles. You but did. Happy birthday again. So I'm sorry we got into like rehab and drugs, but I feel like...
No, it's good. It's good because talking about it, some people are afraid, but I'm not afraid of who I am because I know like I'm good now. And there's some people out there because, you know, when I was like trying by myself, you know, imagine if you're doing that for years, because I tried by myself for a few months, you know, trying to stop and it didn't work and I went to rehab, but some people are doing this for years and they're just suffering. And some people use alone, they drink alone. It's just like, just it's misery. It's misery. Yeah. Yeah. It's like despair, right? So they don't even know about this shit. And then they can hear someone talk about it. And like, holy fuck, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And that's part of the program. Like you are never alone anymore once you go into the program.
I just
that's why I'm never afraid of talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, when I asked you to come on, I didn't want it to be like the main focal point of the podcast, but because I feel like it's such an inspiring story for people. Because I mean, fuck, I knew you in one of those times when you're at your worst. I remember we have a picture together. You came to World Gym one day and you were like,
you keep saying that I was high that day, but I wasn't.
No, you're not high. You weren't high, but you were half the size that you because you must have just been getting out or something. Like
I was struggling.
So so like it's really inspiring for me to see that. And then, and if you want the truth, this I hope this doesn't sound mean. I was mad at you at that time because I knew the potential you had.
I was wasting it.
Because I saw you way back in 2003 and two, and like, you know, you were the first person to get on YouTube and people knew who you were. Yeah. And I'm like, man, this guy has all the fucking tools in the world to be at the very, very top. And he's just, and I was jealous because I'm like, I don't have those genetics. But if I could have his body and do what I'm doing, I would have been way better. So it was like, it was making me angry. I'm like, this guy has the genetics I want, but he's just throwing them away. So it's like,
it's very valid.
Yeah. So it's inspiring to see you go from that to actually fulfilling what you're capable of. So before we go, listen, I want to ask you, YouTube, how did you know to do YouTube before everybody else?
I was already doing videos online and sharing them online through message boards with my friends.
Yeah.
And the thing is, so before YouTube, you had to find somebody with a server. You had to upload the MPEG file. You had to post the link and ask people to right click and download the file on the computer to watch it.
Yeah.
So I was already doing that. So when YouTube came around, I was like, wait, do you can just upload it and people can watch just by clicking? Fuck, that's good. So I started doing that, right?
Yeah.
So I started doing YouTube and I never monetized it until like one day Fear Speech was like, you don't monetize? I said, no, I just do this for fun. Dude, monetize your videos. So, all right. And I never really made a good, a big amount of money on YouTube because there was a 5-year span where I was like doing all the rehabs and stuff that I kind of stopped doing it and everybody started.
Yeah.
So my channel went like down, but I'm trying to always do a few videos, but I'm going to, now that I have some good momentum with the show and stuff, I'm going to get back at it. But there is so YouTube gave me a service. I made my life easier back then with the videos. So that's all I started doing.
So all
because it was convenient for me.
So all those videos with like hundreds of thousands of views, you didn't monetize any of those?
No, because I also use songs,
from
bands.
Yeah.
Also that, because back then there was no money being made. There was no copyright.
Yeah.
There was like no copyright.
Yeah.
So whatever. So it's okay. But they're like little artifacts of videos. Like,
yeah. Just it's like it's a memorial. It's like it's like your life, your life on video. But so I have a question because a lot of those videos are really out there, and they're like, I mean, you're a very charismatic person naturally, but they just seem a little bit crazy. Were you high when you were making those videos or no?
Some of them I was, some of them not.
Okay.
But to be honest, when I would be high, I would be too weirded out. I was like, it was kind of weird. So I wouldn't really do sometimes. I would try, but it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I would overanalyze myself. I would start being paranoid or something. But no, there's some of them that I was, like the video in the garage with Juji and stuff. People keep saying, the video was crazy. I said, yeah. Don't you notice I was drinking beer and eating muffins at the end of the workout? Yeah, you know, it's like I would, so for sure, like I matured, let's say the least, over the years. But people who know me in real life, they notice that I'm pretty much the same guys in the videos, though.
Yeah,
like, there's the me online, me in person is like I'm still kind of like the same person, I find. So
yeah,
no, there's nothing really forced in those videos, really. Like, of course, when you do an intro, we kind of ramped it up. Hey, what's up, guy? Whatever, but.
Yeah,
I'm pretty much, I think I'm the same person. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving forward, you're on your way to the Olympia. Is there anything, you're not planning on doing any shows between now and the Olympia, right?
No.
Okay. So what's the plan for you guys now? You, Dwayne, and Dorian, obviously still going to work together. Is the plan now to keep your weight kind of stable? Or are you going to go up? Are you going to fluctuate up or down?
No, we're going to stabilize the weight right now. And I got my diet yesterday. My blood pressure was a bit higher when I came. I think it's just because of the water and the food, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to fix all that up. I got blood work tomorrow morning and, you know, get clear everything out, you know, and which we can do pretty quick because I did it before. And then after that, it's just like slowly going to the prep of the Olympia, but I'm like 20 weeks away. So I got time. And I'm also want to have like a few weeks where, you know, can go on dates with my girlfriend and just do some stuff, because the mental break for me is very important, because once I'm like, I'm down, it's like there's no break. Because I did a lot. I was like doing the cardio. I would pose every day, and I would like do the training, and there was a lot for me. I never posed as much as for this, pretty much posed for like as soon as I came out of rehab and I started working on my posing.
Pretty much
like with the Antoine Hamlet, the posing coach there. Yeah. And these sessions are fucking hard. Like the two hardest things I would do all week would be the hot yoga and the posing session with Hamlet.
Yeah.
So I'd rather do like leg days.
You know, one of the things you mentioned was the mental break. A lot of people think the cheat meals are because of food and cravings for food. But for me, I'm kind of like you in some ways. It's nice to just turn your brain off and like actually spend time with your girlfriend or wife or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Watch something on TV. Yeah. Just eat something and not think about like, I can't eat that. Just like being yourself almost, you know, just like sit down and just like be in the moment more. So yeah, for me, it's important to do that. But if it's needed, I won't have any. If Dorian says you won't have any, I won't have any. Because in my head, it's like I have to listen to what he says 100%. It's like that's how I am as an athlete, and I'm pretty easy to prep, to be honest. So that's why like when I can have him, I will have him.
But you didn't always have such an easy time getting in shape. I remember when you turned pro. Like part of the reason. Like when you turned pro, I think it took you 2 tries or 3 tries to turn pro. How many times?
Yeah, so John Meadows turned me pro.
Yeah.
I tried before that. Jose Raymond was coaching me.
Because I remember.
Jose Raymond got me shredded for the Arnold Amateurs.
So am I, okay, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm mistaken. But I thought the thing for you back then was you always had the physique and you had the muscle, but you couldn't get completely shredded. Is that true or no?
I think for the when I won my pro card, I wasn't like shredded at all.
Yeah.
But I had like the size, right?
Yeah.
So I think John just wanted me full or something. But the all amateurs, I was like super shredded. That was like 233, and that was a good physique. And then styles the Canadians like the year after that, I was good. But Mike Johnson, I don't know if you remember, Mike Johnson was just peeled. Then Jerome was too. Yeah, Michael Johnson. He actually drank water to go up a class with super heavies because he thought he had a better chance. He actually won the whole show. It was so diced.
Wait,
and then Mike Jerome Bravo was second.
I'm Mike Johnson from Newfoundland or from East.
Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Okay, I know Mike Johnson.
I miss the guy. I used to hang out with him all the time.
Yeah.
And so he won that show. I became friends with him that day, and I trained with him for a whole year. Then I won the following year. But yeah, so he was first. Jerome Bravo was second at 275.
I remember Jerome. He was like 6'1", like just massive.
Oh my God. He was the biggest guy that I've seen in my life.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I got beat then, but then I came in like bigger and better for the 2012. But then it's after that I fucking sucked 2013, the New York Pro, like with the diaper posing trunks. Like what was because I signed the contracts and I thought I had to do it or else I will like get banned.
Yeah,
but I was out of my mind. It was the beginning of my descent, to be honest. But
what's the diaper posing trunks?
it's like I had like because my glutes were not in. I was like, I'm trying to use trunks that are kind of old school
to hide your ass.
Yeah, don't pull it up.
I can't find it. I'm not gonna be able to find it. There's okay, no fucking.
It's funny though. You can find it if you want. You just type New York Pro 2013 Antoine.
Let's see.
Terrible.
Can you find it anywhere here?
Yeah, it's over there. Click the top left.
Top
this left, one? I see them. No, top left, I see it. There's three. I see it. No, okay. Top left, the picture.
Oh, top left.
Last press. I thought it was a good idea.
That's awesome. you're basically wearing classic shorts.
Yeah.
You look good there, though. That's Cedric there, right?
Yeah, no, that don't look good. Like if you look at
I mean you're not shredded, but like you have a lot of fucking muscle. Like your shape is really good.
Yeah, I was like 260 something.
That's fucking that's great, man.
I know.
Well, Antoine, I'm really happy for you, man. Everything seems to be going the way it's supposed to be. Do you wanna say anything, any message, any thanks?
Of course. I would never be able to be where I am without the help of Dorian Hamilton. You know how he is, right? But and without his help, because every time I would mess up in rehab, and as soon as I would be doing good, he would be helping me And I could go from having nothing to being successful really quick again and again because of him, right?
Yeah.
So, and as a coach, since 2018, I chose him. And man, it's like, I wouldn't want to be coached by anyone else.
Yeah.
Anyone else. I think if, at least for me, I think he is the best. And this time around, combined with Dwayne Jackson, who, like I said, pretty much saved my life down the line, you know, by helping me, like, do the tests and stuff and having my health always first and as a priority on point and helping me with the prep. It's like, man, you saved my life down the line in my bodybuilding career. So the two of them together, Dwayne and Doran Hamilton, are, like, the main two factors on why I could I ended up doing this and winning. You know, winning is a cherry on top, but like just doing this again and being at my best. So these guys, like I owe the victory to them, you know, and I wanted to win that for Doran as much or even more than for myself, the because he deserves all the wins, to be honest, because he helps so many people. People know him, when I'm talking about people who don't know him, is that, like, he's one of the best people around and in the industry, probably like the one of the most righteous people with the best values and with integrity, you know. And of course, I'd like to thank my sponsors, AG Muscle, Iron Bowl Strength, Right Aware, and Fit Menu, and you know, all my friends back home, Pure Muscle and Fitness, which is probably the fuck best freaking gym in the world, to be honest. Like, when you think about it for bodybuilding, like, seriously,
It's pretty insane in there, man.
If you add a sauna in a pool, it's like better than the oxygen gym. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, so just a lot of gratitude for these guys. And of course, shout out to my girlfriend over there. What's she doing?
How long have you been with your girlfriend now?
It's going to be a year in September.
Ah, good for you, man.
Yeah, no, she's the best. And she made this prep so easy. I've been a year with her almost, and we didn't fight once, not even prep.
Not once?
Not once.
Is that because of you or because of her?
I think it's because of both of us.
Well, sometimes one person is a little bit more understanding than the other. So
are you both
just like in perfect harmony so there's no fighting, or is she really understanding?
No, she's very understanding, and she's very like easygoing, and you know, and I'm very patient too.
Yeah.
In prep, I will never, sometimes I will respond like short.
Yeah.
Then I wait, then I kind of introspect, like we said, that I'm like, you know what, I'm sorry I said like that. I like catch myself, because I had to learn how to do that anyway. Making amends is part of the program too, right? So that's why like addiction was a curse, now it's a blessing, because I'm so much more better because of I'm in recovery.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to her for sure. And my mom, you know, my birthday tomorrow, and I always think about that. Why am I the one being celebrated? She's the one who did the crazy work. Right? Like, she was used like this, like, just 35 years ago. She had a big belly. And you somehow, always... 9 months ago, I was this.
You always
and,
think of...
And then she made me like a wizard. So she deserves all
like
the
wizard
praise. So shout out to my mom too.
She's you always think, you know, one thing that's I've always known about you is you always think of things different than everybody else. Nobody's ever said that. Nobody's ever said that in my life. So we'll celebrate your mom. Happy birthday to your mom.
Yes, exactly. Good job, mom. Thanks for creating me.
All right, Antoine. Listen, one more thing. Where are you gonna place at the Olympia?
Well, the prediction I have, because I was close with Ian Bayar, I think I have a feeling they're going to stack me up near him.
You think so?
Well,
so
right?
So you're saying
bodybuilding enough.
So I know predictions are kind of stupid, but are you saying top 10 just for
yeah,
fun?
I want to do top 10.
Is that your goal?
Yeah, it's my goal. Like, my goal is the highest that we can. My goal is to give 100% again. You know what I mean? Like, you can only control it and say so much, but for fun, if I'm in the top 10, that's an improvement from the last Olympia.
Yeah.
That's an upward little climb there, so that's good. But I look at the list, it's pretty stacked though.
Oh yeah.
The list is pretty stacked. Like Sean Farida's in it. I'm like, there's a lot of fucking guys. Like, it's pretty stacked.
Yeah.
It's like how many competitors is there now?
I think the last time I counted it was like 25 or something like that. It's a deep
That's
it's like
the more than the other years.
When I look at the lineup, it's like you can see kind of maybe who the top five, top six would be, And then everybody else is just
toss up.
Yeah, it can go.
Who's on, who's off? Who's on, who's off? And yeah, so the one I did, there were 17 guys, right?
I don't remember.
18 guys, because I was like 15. Yeah. I think Regan was like 16, and 17 was he won.
Yeah, yeah.
Morel. So and then last year, I don't remember how many guys there were, but this year is a 25, and it's a few shows still.
Yeah, yeah, I know. This year, seems, we were talking about that on one of the podcasts. It seems like there's a lot of competitors in each class. There's like 40 or something like that guys in the classic and the physique. And I think by the time the year is done with the men, there's probably going to be 30 guys. Yeah.
30. It's like, you know, back then, the Night of Champions, there was like 30 guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be like that. It's going to be crazy.
I was actually, when we were talking, me and the guys were talking, I was actually wondering about that. Do you think, since we're talking about it, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing for the Olympia? Do you think the Olympia should be more like you have to earn it more to get there, or it should be as many guys as can win?
Well, earn it more. Only the winners qualify.
I know, but like we were talking about, should the Olympia lineup be that big? Or should you narrow it down to like 15 people? Like maybe only the top tier and second tier shows qualify, third tier shows don't. You know what I mean? Like, do you think there's too many guys or no? You think as many guys as possible is better?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think if like, even if there would be 30 guys, just you do the pre-judging and then some guys will get a fucking last call out. Whatever. I was the last call out last time.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but last call out when you did it was only 3 call outs.
True.
Yeah. So now it's gonna be like 5 call outs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is it hard to judge 30 people?
That's what I'm saying. It's like it gets complicated, right? The more guys you have there. So it's like, should you narrow it down as the year goes on so that it's only 20 guys or 15 guys and it's the cream of the crop, you know?
Maybe just remove the points.
Yeah, that takes out like 2 or 3 guys. How many guys qualify points? 3 or 5?
I think it was 3.
Yeah, you get rid of those 3. Yeah,
I would get rid of those 3. And you want to make it harder? No problem. Just like only top 3 qualify, not top 5.
What do you? Oh, from the
Olympia.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Arnold, only the first qualifies or the top 5?
No, I think only the first qualifies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking like the third tier shows don't qualify you for an Olympia.
Like Vancouver.
Yeah, but then the thing that sucks about that is less guys will do it. So then it makes the promoter not want to
do it. No, yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I think is it because there's more pro shows this year?
There's more shows this year, yeah. That's the other option is you could just narrow down the shows. That way the shows will have a deeper lineups and you get less guys at the Olympia.
Yeah, that could be an option. But, well, sorry it goes. Maybe it's going to go really well.
I mean, it's going to be fun to see all the guys competing anyway, so it's not a big deal. We're just having the discussion for fun.
Yeah. No.
Anyway.
Either way, like, I think anybody who can have the chance to go to the Olympia is like, it's a nice thing, right?
Is this your second time?
Second one, yeah.
Yeah, good for you, man.
Yeah.
Antoine, listen, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing all the behind the scenes and deeper stories so people can learn from it.
Yeah,
so
no problem.
I appreciate the time, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Okay, bro.
Guys.
Take it easy.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks for watching. Please subscribe, share with your friends, and like the video. And if you get a chance, check out the description for all the different links to all the different places you can find Hostile and myself. And lastly, check out hostile.com for our new line of supplements and all of our apparel and gear. Thanks again for watching.